Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI reflects on the just concluded year for priests and says all of its good cannot be measured, but that people will certainly see its fruits. As football fans the world over celebrate their teams playing in the ongoing World Cup in South Africa, human rights and religious organisations raise the alarm against possible human trafficking and exploitation. We hear the story of one religious sister who has made it her mission to help and save trafficked women in Italy. And film critic Peter Malone talks about a very particular film that takes us right inside the cloistered reality of a congregation of Carmelite nuns. Pope Benedict XVI says all the good of the year for priests cannot be measured, but that people will certainly see its fruits. Before praying the Midday Angelus on Sunday, the Pope reflected on the year for priests that ended on Friday. He said the closing celebrations in Rome with some 15,000 priests from around the world were unforgettable days, and he recalled the model of the year for priests proclaimed Friday as the patron of all priests, St. John Vianney. Chris Altieri has this report.
The Pope was speaking to the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square to pray the traditional Sunday Angelus with him.
San Giovanni Maria Vianney.
He said he hopes that the figure of the holy cure of Ars, St. John Marie Vianney, might continue to provide a nourishing example to priests in their personal conversation with God. The Pope also recalled the Polish priest and martyr, Father Jerzy Popoluszko, who was beatified on June the 6th in Warsaw, noting how many works of integral human development arise from the free initiatives and the witness of priests in every society and in every age. The Holy Father also recalled the beatification this weekend of two laymen, the journalist Manuel Lozano Garrido, who was declared blessed on Saturday in Spain, and on Sunday in Slovenia, the Cardinal Secretary of State Tarcisio Bertone proclaimed blessed the young martyr and apostle of Catholic action, Lodze Grodze.
Angelus Domini nunciavit Mariae.
After the traditional prayer of Marian devotion, Pope Benedict greeted the faithful in many languages, including English.
Last Friday, the solemnity of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, I had the joy of concluding the year for priests, marked by moving moments of community prayer and adoration. Let us continue to remember all priests in our prayers, thanking Christ for this great gift of his love and asking him to keep them in his grasp as faithful friends and ministers.
I'm Chris Altieri.
Thanks there to Chris Altieri for that report. As football fans the world over celebrate their teams playing in the ongoing World Cup in South Africa, human rights and religious organisations raise the alarm against possible human trafficking and exploitation in a situation in which criminal rings are out to make the most of the vulnerable members of a poor society. Yes, although the reality of the World Cup highlights a host of issues, today I have chosen to talk about the danger represented by unscrupulous criminals out to exploit poor and probably uninformed women and youth in a situation in which boisterous and often alcoholically altered fans may be unaware of the ultimate consequences of their actions. This is and has been a top concern for the Catholic Church in South Africa and in the world, as Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier, Archbishop of Durban, told me just the other day.
Particularly worried we are about the human trafficking and the possibility of children and women being siphoned off and brought into all kinds of slavery situations.
But this is not just a World Cup issue. It's a tragic reality and predicament of hundreds of thousands of girls and women who are enslaved and exploited by powerful rings of criminals who traffic in sex and slavery every day around the world. It is on this reality I have chosen to shine the light today. To do this, I spoke to Sister Eugenia Bonetti, a remarkable woman, whom I was lucky to catch here in Rome in between conferences, lectures, and the work she does with political, social, and religious institutions, persuading them to support her cause. Tell
me about yourself, your background, where you grew up, why you decided to become a nun, when did you decide to become a nun?
Very good. These are very good questions that are helping me to remind myself of my roots. I am a consolata missionary sister. Originally, I'm from Milan. I was only 14 in 1953 when I read on a missionary magazine that a consolata missionary sister was killed in Kenya. It was the time of independence, and so there was a lot of disturbances. And this sister, who spent 32 years of her missionary life in Kenya, offered her life completely, and she was killed. And at a certain moment, I really felt the desire and the inspiration of saying, she's no longer alive, she can no longer work for people. She has decided to do it for so many years. So that place is vacant. I want to take it up.
Yes, the story of that missionary sister made such a deep impression on the 14-year-old girl. She did what she could to find out about the Sisters of the Consolata, and 6 years later, she entered their congregation in Turin.
So when I entered the congregation in 1959, after 6 months since I read that story of that sister who passed away, a second sister, Eugenia, because that first sister was called Sister Eugenia Cavallo, a second sister, Eugenia, also passed away on the same day at a distance of 6 years. She was very young. She had a cancer. So when I read, as soon as I arrived in Turin to enter the congregation, I read the story that even the second one passed away. I said, I will be the third one.
My next question came naturally. Is Eugenia your baptismal name?
No, my baptism name is Maddalena, Mary Magdalene. And this, yes, very fitting, exactly, because names are very significant. Yeah, but even the name that was given in religion, for me it's very significant because I followed the footsteps of the first sister Eugenia that was killed. And so I was also lucky because after my formation, my preparation, I left for Kenya. I was sent to work in Kenya where that the first sister Eugenia was killed. And I continued to work for 24 years. I was so happy, so well integrated in that environment with women especially. You know, just to be with women, helping them to overcome their poverty and also helping them to become aware of their role, of their dignity, of their life, of their strength, their richness.
So Sister Eugenia spent 24 years in a mission in a beautiful rural area of Kenya. She was a religious education advisor and was fully involved in African life.
And I was so happy to be there. But all at once, something happened that I was called to come back to Italy and to become a missionary in my own country, which was not so easy for me. But that was my world, was my family. I was so happy. But now, with obedience, I have to come back because I was asked to work in a Caritas drop-in center in Turin for immigrant women that early 90s started to come from different countries looking for a better way of life.
Sister Eugenia told me that in Italy in the first years of the 1990s, it was mostly Nigerian and Polish women who were trafficked and forced into prostitution, most of them between 14 and 18 years of age. The numbers were growing steadily, and there was an urgent need for help.
But for me at the beginning, it was not easy. I could not understand why, because I had the impression that I betrayed my missionary vocation. I thought at that time that to be a missionary was only to be in Africa. And so now to find myself in the big city of Turin, it was so difficult for me to understand to be there. Even though I accepted to be there, my mind was not there. I was always in Africa, until one day. One day something happened in my life at that drop-in center. I met for the first time an African woman, a Nigerian woman, that came to ask for help. Maria, for me, has really become, you know, a very important person, a symbol that helped me to change my life.
Maria, Sister Eugenia told me, was sick. A doctor had sent her to the drop-in centre in search of help. But she was the one who really helped Sister Eugenia come to terms with her new mission.
I used to see these women along the street, and I was annoyed with them, because I said, what are these African women doing in Italy, standing on the street looking for clients? I had no idea of what was behind it. And so I became also annoyed, like many other people, because I thought that they were there because they wanted to be there. But Maria changed my mind. Maria helped me to understand that they were there because they had no other choice. They were forced to be there, that there was all kind of different organization, criminal organization. They used their poverty. They used their situation in order to get money and in order to provide a special kind of service for the ones asking for it, because they were ready to pay for it. So now when I met Maria, and it took some time for me before realizing, you know, the whole situation, but Maria became my catechist. She became my teacher. We helped her to regain health, but she helped me to regain my vocation.
So Sister Eugenia readjusted her vision of missionary life, no longer in Africa, but in her own country.
I was in crisis, in deep crisis, because I didn't know what to do before. But she helped me to understand the mission was no longer geography, but the mission was where these women, in a very special women that, you know, I was so happy to live with them in Africa, and now these women were in my own country.
They were the same women.
Yeah, they were the same women in my own country, but in such a different trauma, drama, terrible situation, exploitation, humiliation.
In Sister Eugenia's own words, she became a missionary of the night and of the street.
I move around all over the world nowadays just to highlight the problem of these women, to become the voice of these women, because they have no voice, they have no rights, they are just humiliated, they are just frustrated, they are just treated like rotten people because they are all broken.
Sister Eugenia was careful to point out that nowadays there are different forms of human trafficking for different reasons and different purposes. But she and her sisters work with those who are exploited sexually.
Being sisters, so much concern for the well-being of women. We know the terrible drama these women live, especially when they are forced to give up the most precious gift. That is their femininity, their motherhood, their youth, being women, to be forced to sell themselves, not for their own sake, not for their own gain, but for the gain and the sake of somebody else.
And in the years, there has been an evolution in the mechanisms of human trafficking for sexual exploitation. In the beginning, Sister Eugenia explained, the girls used to be brought over in groups under the guise of pilgrims, only to immediately have their documents taken away and end up on the streets. When authorities realised what was happening, visas for pilgrimages stopped being issued, and traffickers found other ways of getting the women across, like flying them first to other countries, or, as the majority do at this moment in history, getting them to walk across the desert and sail the sea, with great risk to their lives. All this, of course, with the promise of a good job and extra money to be able to send home.
The biggest group that we have in Italy, it is from Nigeria, 59%. At the moment, we have between 50, 70, even we can go even as far as 100,000 women, immigrant women working on the streets.
And the fact that they are all illegal makes it very difficult to get exact figures and to have a clear picture of their situation. What we do know, says Sister Bonetti, is that the organisations behind the phenomenon know exactly how to go about it.
There is a well-organised organisation. They know how to move, because there is a lot of people earning from these women, getting money. There is a lot of corruption at all levels, airport, embassies, immigration offices, taxi driver, people renting houses where these people can stay. There is a strong chain. And the chain has many links, many rings, and all these links have names. And among these names, there are also victims and their poverty. There are also clients with their frustration, with their wealth, that they can do anything they want, with the money at the expenses of these women who are really treated like rags. They are used and thrown away, used and thrown away.
Much of Sister Eugenia's work is connecting and communicating with the different links in that chain. She told me that she has just been to Libya, which is where most of the girls who cross the desert stay before undertaking the final leg of their journey.
Because for us as sisters working in this field, it is very important to work in connection with all the organizations that are dealing, they are concerned for this. And we are women and want to be women for women. And we are working also with sisters in different countries of origin in order to link countries of origin, transit and destination. Libya is one of the countries of transit. Origin, we are already very well established with the sisters in Nigeria. And they are working with us, prevention, reintegration, when we send back girls who want to go back to be with their own families and to get in contact with them once again. But we also needed to be in contact with the sisters and with the organization working on transit.
A transit, Sister Eugenia says, that too often is the last chapter in their lives.
Many, many of them die in the desert. And if they don't die in the desert, they can die as they cross
the sea,
on the boats. Now the sea have become the new cemeteries for thousands of migrants, women and men and children who tried for a better life, who tried to risk their life in order to give some help to their families. And this is what is happening to them.
Going back a bit, the reason religious sisters first got involved in helping the women who found themselves on the streets here in Italy is because, not knowing who to turn to, many of them knocked on the doors of the convents, and the sisters soon came to realize that society was facing a new crisis.
And some of the sisters who could really see that there was something very special, that we had to give attention to this new phenomenon, because nobody knew this phenomenon, because there was a great request. And that is why, you know, because there was the offering, you know, these poor women, they were taken and because they had no other opportunities for any better life because there was the request. So the traffickers used these two realities together. From one side, the push because of the poverty, and from the other side, the other push because of another request. Yes. And so now these two poverties, one was material poverty, and the other one is the poverty of values, of situation in life that join together. And now what we destroy? We destroy the life of these young people. We destroy the life of these women completely, but we destroy also the life of our own families. Because even clients are slaves of another situation.
Slavery, says Sister Eugenia, is the right word to use. These women are slaves, with shackles that are almost impossible to be rid of.
These women are asked by their madams, by the traffickers, in order to regain their freedom. They are asked nowadays to pay 60, 70, 80,000 euros. And now, in order to pay all this money, these women, they have to undergo not less than 4,000 sexual encounters with a man.
In the first years, it was the police who would bring the girls to the sisters. Today, the sisters' network extends throughout Italy, with shelters and drop-in centres.
Now, at the moment, we have in Italy about 100 family homes, shelters,
across Italy,
run by sisters. All different congregations, 70, 75 congregations that have opened their congregations to the new challenge of today. And in their own houses, in their own buildings, where these girls could stay as long as it is needed. So now we started giving protection, training them, giving them lessons to acquire a profession, but also to learn the language. But there was a main big problem. We could not give legality.
So in 1997, the religious sisters, Caritas, and a few other organizations held a groundbreaking conference in Rome to which all women parliamentarians were invited.
We wanted them to hear what was happening on the street, because everybody could see them, but nobody was aware of what was really happening. And so now from what the sisters Caritas could share with them, they realized that the problem was big. And at a certain moment we said, we have done our part. Now it is up to you. We need a legal status for these women in order to regain them fully, to help them to regain their dignity, their freedom, because they are still vulnerable.
Soon afterwards, a law was passed, granting these victims of human trafficking the possibility of requesting a renewable 6-month work permit, allowing them to acquire an identity and the chance for emancipation. Today, Sister Eugenia says, we work in cooperation with the Nigerian embassy that grants many of the women new passports and the possibility of building a new life. And subsequent cooperative efforts with the US Embassy to the Holy See have seen further progress in prevention and preparation, including training courses for religious sisters involved in this very particular work. But, she says, there is much still to be done, especially in raising awareness and sensitivity on the side of our well-to-do society.
Because you simply have money and you think that with your money you can buy even a body of a minor or the poverty of a woman, because each one of us have been created with the same dignity. So nobody has the right to buy the dignity of another person. It's something that is so great, so important. So now we have to make people to understand, and to start also from with young people to realize and to appreciate relationship, respect for one another, for their own selves, for their own life, and also for the life of other people. Because each one of us have been created in the image of God, and no one has the right to treat another human being as a slave.
Now it's over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he talks about a special and very unusual film, directed by Michael White, about a group of Carmelite nuns in the Monastery of the Most Holy Trinity in Notting Hill. A very particular film.
It is, although the company that's distributing it in the UK had a great commercial success with the German film Into Great Silence three or four years ago.
I remember that, yes.
And that was released in the United States. So I think they're hoping that it will follow on with interest and the same success. I personally actually liked it much, much better than Into Great Silence.
Tell us about it.
It's about a Carmelite convent in Notting Hill in London.
Which actually exists?
Oh, yes, it's a real one. The man lives in the same square. He just went across the street. He'd asked the sisters for about 10 years if he could make a documentary about them, and they kept saying they didn't think it was the right time. Maybe they'd all just seen Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts in Notting Hill around 1999 and said no. But eventually they did say yes a couple of years ago, and he spent a year going across the street. And the sisters welcomed him into the community, and he filmed their prayer, their activity, their recreation, their work, and also did some interviews and then edited them all together in a way that I think Anglo-Saxon Celtic tradition audiences will find more enlightening and perhaps a bit more inspirational than Into Great Silence.
It's really a glimpse, or more than a glimpse, quite a good look at what these nuns do all day in the silence of their cloister and the questions they ask themselves, isn't it?
It is, and I think that it raises some answers for the questions that people ask about a contemplative community. I'd have to say one of the disappointing things for me But the director said that he couldn't put everything in. But I would have liked a lot more about the spirituality of the Carmelites, what's distinctive about them. My problem with Integrate Silence was that I really didn't learn anything about Carthusian spirituality from the film. Now, I would have liked something on contemplative prayer. There is a mention of St. Teresa of Avila when Bishop Arnold of London gives the newly professed sister the constitutions, but there's no mention, say, of St. John of the Cross or even of St. Teresa of Lisieux. And I think a lot of audiences would have been very interested to hear the sisters reflecting on how they were influenced in their spirituality by those saints.
Although that's an opinion of someone who is obviously an expert, as you are, in spirituality. As you yourself say at the beginning of your review, very beautiful review, you don't have to be an atheist to wonder what it is about nuns shutting themselves away, praying, chanting, denying the pleasures of life for the love of a higher being. And I think that's a question that, you know, that will interest everyone.
Well, that's true. And the sisters themselves, some of those who are interviewed, do tell a little bit of their life story and what motivated them in joining the monastery. And I think people are inspired by that and they like the storytelling. And again, we see such detail of the day, whether it be meals, whether it be the sisters who make the hosts and prepare them to be sent out, or plenty of work in the garden, I notice.
Yes, working, working, working.
Yes. So there's certainly a lot of that aspect of contemplative life which will make a lot of sense, I think, to people, even if they say, I could never do that myself, but I can understand these women making that kind of commitment and what it means to them.
I saw a tiny piece on the YouTube in which the prioress, I think she is, actually voices a doubt, a very profound and honest doubt, and I thought that was very beautiful and compelling.
Well, there's always the thought that maybe the atheists are quite right and there's just a void at the other side. But I always feel then that, well, if that happens, at least nobody will be around to tell me so. Whereas if I'm right, there will be somebody there to meet me.
Yes, I think that's important for people to realise that people who make a commitment, say, to a religious order, don't just simply waft on that commitment for the rest of their lives, that reality over the years and as we change and grow older, there are all kinds of challenges, whether they be intellectual or emotional. And so that whole area of some doubts, some uncertainties, but a faith through that, I think is important for looking at the lives of religious.
And a full immersion into a reality which is really very much at odds with the outside world.
It is, but I think that there have been so many movements, whether they be New Age or interest in the Eastern religions, that there needs to be some kind of space, some kind of silence, some kind of a possibility for reflection in our 24/7 active world.
Just finally, a mention of the beautiful photography, the breathtaking images that have been described as pictures of Dutch masters come to life.
I must say that didn't occur to me as I watched it. I suppose I was very much more pragmatic in looking at the reality of, and you know, from the inside of a religious community, seeing how they compared. So I hope people do get that kind of impression. Mine was of the much more practical variety.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter.
That was Peter Malone, head of the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.